And the visual, it will make your day. You guys, just go see it. Jeremy is the one in the purple dress and the wig.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
It was me that time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like to clarify that time. Other times you might see Subtastics, I might not be in a dress and a wig. It could be one of the other guys.
Hello and welcome to Movie
Smash!
Hello and welcome to Movie Smash, a show where we dive headfirst into comic book movies. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash a movie whose source materials from a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of All Panel Creations. With me today, I have a man whose name means du jour, Jeremy Parmentier.
Hey, this is Jeremy Parmentier, also of Retrovaniacs. My name does mean du jour, and I have to say I'm here because I'm the new old Jeremy of Movie Smash.
And also with us today, we have, she's only here really because she was in the comic, Lori Calcaterra.
Hi, everybody. I'm Lori Calcaterra. I am not Fergal Amayo. I have less facial hair and a much higher voice. I'm a little bit cuter than him, too. I'm really enjoying being on this show. Although I got to say, I hate this movie.
Hold it till we get to it.
Sorry, I can't contain it. The hate is top notch. But well, yeah, I'm here. I'm in comics. I write comics. If you like a Western apocalypse, throw in a new genre of zombies, I'm here for you. I check all the boxes with Path of the Pale Rider. Thank you.
Our movie tonight, if you could not tell, is 2001's Josie and the Pussycats, starring Rachel Lee Cook, Tara Reid, and Rosario Dawson, directed by Harry Elfont and Deborah Kaplan.
For every band, there is a moment when they know they have made it. For one band, this is not that moment.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. You're a great crowd.
Okay, girls, we need the lane now. And your shoes.
They were three small-town girls with big-time dreams.
Who's a rock star?
I am.
Who wanted to share their music with the world.
We can't sit around here waiting for it to happen. We are musicians. We should be out there playing music.
We do play.
Nobody believed in them.
You know, you suck.
But they believed in themselves.
We're special.
Yeah, special, Ed.
Now.
So before we jump in the movie, guys, the timing of this was too crazy. We just released V for Vendetta back on November 4th. And then the news broke shortly afterwards. I think they listened to our episode. And there are two big pieces of news. One, they're going to re-release that movie in theaters in 2026. And they're coming up with a new TV show based upon that graphic novel. I want to hear your thoughts. And so you both were on that episode. Should they be doing this? And are you going to love the chaos that happens in that theater?
I mean, I don't know if I'm going to love the chaos that happens in the theater. Although by next year, who knows if they even still have a country. So we might not need to worry about it. It might just come out in other countries while we deal with our nuclear holocaust on this side of the world. You know, if it's 20th anniversary, I think it might be coincidence that they listened to our episode, I'm sure of that, and then decided to re-release this for next year. That must have already been on the books. The TV series is interesting. I would be more interested if they do something different with it. Like, I didn't love this, but I thought it was an interesting take, was the HBO Watchmen series, which was, you know, it took some themes, it ran with its own thing, it was in the same universe more or less. Like, I liked it, and it did do its own thing, and it tied to it. So if they do something like that for V for Vendetta, that's pretty cool. I don't know if we need a direct remake, but you know, I'm willing to give it a shot because I did enjoy the movie more than I thought I would. So, and I just bought the graphic novel finally because it's on the DC Compact run. So for $10, there's no reason not to own V for Vendetta. So I do now.
I agree with Jeremy. I think that if they do something different, that it would be worth watching. But I still stand by my words from that episode that they should leave this one alone. Do not try to redo this magic. I don't think it's going to be received well if they try to do it with, I don't know. I think they have to be careful. I really think that the atmosphere out there is volatile. And I think that they could mess it up and then the masses will come out with the pitchforks. So we'll see what they do with the HBO. I think a re-release in the theater is fine. We will all go see it, and that's fine. But they should listen to us closer next time they listen to the episode and leave this one the F alone.
So, James Gunn, we know you're listening.
Don't mess it up.
Send us a check, too. I mean, we know we need our corporate sponsorship, which ties in perfectly to this movie. Jeremy, normally we do this, it's random what movies we pick, but this one we actually went out of our way to choose. Do you want to tell people why we chose this one?
Yes, I picked this because I'm in a band called Subtastics. And for our last album, we released the title track of this movie as like a secret bonus track. And then we learned it so we could play it at a bowling alley because I do that in the movie. We thought it was funny. I saw this movie when it was new. And one of the only other people on the planet that likes it as much as I do happens to be the bass player for Subtastics. So very excited to cover that. And I didn't realize, I mean, I knew it was a comic book movie, but like I didn't put together two and two for a long time. Like I'm on a podcast about movies based on comic books. I've played a cover of a song from a movie based on comic books. Perhaps I should mash these two things together in honor of our new album that should be out in January, tentatively titled Warlords of the Mid-Atlantic. This song will not be on there, but you can find it on Bandcamp, subtastics.bandcamp.com.
And I think there's a video of you wearing a boa on YouTube.
Actually, I'm wearing a dress and the ears, and Paul is wearing a boa. So,
oh my God.
Lori, you have seen that video. What are your thoughts? And should people go find that video specifically?
100% go find the video. It will change your perspective on Jeremy. The music's really good. Now, and we'll talk about the music in the movie, but I'm impressed with this. It sounds great. It's wild. And the visual, it will make your day. You guys, just go see it. Jeremy is the one in the purple dress and the wig.
Correct. Yes. That was me that time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like
yeah.
to clarify that time. Other times you might see Subtastics, I might not be in a dress and a wig. It could be one of the other guys. But in that video, it is me.
Amazing. Amazing.
Now, were you guys familiar that this was a comic?
Yes. I knew it was an Archie adjacent like property. But I, other than knowing that was that, I don't remember ever watching any of this. I believe there may have been a cartoon series, you know, at some point that I would have glimpsed into. But I was not an Archie fan necessarily. I didn't really read any of these. So I knew it was. But, you know, I couldn't have told you like, is this an adaptation of a story in the comics? I have no clue.
Agreed. It's too old for me.
Yeah.
I put notes, hashtag boomer. Just not, anything like Archie and this era is just way before anything that I was reading comics. So, I mean, I knew it was comics because it's part of the show. And that's about it.
Yeah, the only thing my actual first introduction was really through the Hanna-Barbera cartoon. I think it ran for like a season or something. So I didn't know it was a comic, just that it was an animated show. And then as you get older, you realize Archie has just been around for forever and had so many different spinoffs.
Yeah.
But was this the first time seeing it? Jeremy, you kind of mentioned you've seen this in the theaters, but
opening weekend.
Why? Oh my
So I worked at a comic book store very briefly in the late 90s. And so some of the friends I had from that comic store, including my friend, the Joe, I'm still friends with today, were very ironically excited about this movie. But at the same time, we're in our early 20s. The cast of this movie is very attractive. So we're like, you know what? We'll go to this movie. This dude looks it'll be a good time. We got there and we were the only people there that either were not with their children or children. That said, enjoyed seeing it in the movie theater. I'm not sure if anyone else in that movie theater enjoyed it. Nearly as much as Joe and I, but it was a good time.
Yeah, this is my first and last viewing of this book, or I mean of this movie. I shall never again accost my time, my eyes, my ears.
I think you watched the wrong movie. I think you must.
No. It's the same one that you guys watched, and it's terrible. That is my opinion. I'm sticking to it.
The first time I saw this movie was for this show, but I'm looking forward to this discussion about sort of why you love it or hate it. But Lori, what's the history of this comic?
Okay, so Josie and the Pussycats was originally published as She's Josie, and Josie is a teen humor comic book about a fictional rock band created by Dan DeCarlo and published by Archie Comics. So first published in 1963 with regular issues that went all the way to 1982. Additional one-shot issues followed, and it's kind of on an irregular basis. So that's the comic book. And then, like Chris mentioned, there was a Hanna-Barbera Saturday morning cartoon, the animated series of Josie and the Pussycats, which was right around 1970, which also did come out with a soundtrack. And so tapping into that music, merch, you know, it all kind of goes together. If they can make money off of it, they're making it.
So quick spoiler warning before we jump into things. If this is your first time joining us, just a heads up. We're going to be assessing certain elements of the story that might be considered spoilers for this 90-minute music video. So if you don't want to be spoiled, go watch it, because seeing is believing. So consider yourself warned. So, Jeremy, what actually happens in Josie and the Pussycats?
Sure. Josie and her friends Valerie and Melody are the Pussycats, a band trying to get their music heard in the town of Riverdale. It starts out with them having a show at a bowling alley that, you know, you can tell after it's over is them just playing on their own in the corner of a bowling alley while people bowl and totally ignore them. I've been there. I understand what it feels like. And so they manage to somehow run into a talent scout from Mega Records, Wyatt, who signs them. And they, you know, launch into stardom. But something doesn't seem quite right with this quick rise to fame and this new label. And so the girls investigate to find out what's really going on.
No, that's pretty much it. So there are a lot of characters in this movie, a lot of caricatures and characters. I want to start with, though, they're not in the title of the movie and they're not in the movie too much, but Du Jour. What did you guys think of the band Du Jour?
Hilarious. It starts the whole movie. The song that they're singing, it was what, Backdoor Lover?
Backdoor Lover.
Like, come on. It's just so ridiculous, but such a parody of like, these are serious what you get these days, these prepackaged boy bands. We got NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and I mean, you name it. And it's even like, I want to compare this movie even to like K-pop Demon Hunters. It still is a new version.
Yes.
Much more, it's executed a lot better because there's an actual plot here.
I would say it's not supposed to be as much of a parody as this is, but yes.
No,
I would
exactly,
say if you like,
exactly.
Like this kind of thing, then I can see K-pop Demon Hunters being a quote, better version of what
it's
this
is. It's a different version. It was a different take. And yeah, I think this is more in parody land, but back to Du Jour, hilarious. Talks about, I mean, like when you see them on the airplane where they're fighting over stupid stuff, like so-and-so's face is on a can of Coke and mine isn't. And they're fighting over like the pose. That's my face. We'll get you a new face. And I mean, they're fighting over a monkey pooping on thing. Like, it's just ridiculous, but hilarious about they figure something out. Like they give you a hint that something is not as what it seems. And then freaking Alan Cummings and the pilot just bail and they jump out of this airplane, leaving Du Jour to who knows what fate. So that's our first experience with Du Jour, but spot on, like hilarious and a parody of all these boy bands that we are familiar with.
Well, I do like the fact that it's our introduction to what the premise of this movie really is, which is a takedown of that industry, but also it is a spoof. It is not meant to be serious. Unlike Demon Hunters, where I think they took themselves seriously. This was meant to be, this is a tongue-in-cheek movie. This is going to be hilarious. I mean, there are logos for Target on
everywhere.
Their plane. Everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
There's like a they have like bounce dryer sheets.
There's stuff everywhere.
Talking about product placement.
And the fact that, you know, there's a running gag of what Du Jour means. And it's like
friendship.
5 minute bit. It's friendship. It's hygiene. I wrote them all down. It's family. It's teamwork. It's seatbelts and it's crash positions.
Oh
and
my God.
Du Jour means of the day, obviously, because this band is of the day. It's like, it's not meant to last very long. So it's just funny that this whole scene of them coming, you know, landing and doing the impromptu, you know, set on the tarmac. And then now they're on the plane and like this little infighting that they do to really sort of set the premise of this is not a serious movie. This is going to be ridiculous. The music's going to be kind of fun and wacky, specifically that, like I said, they're not taking themselves seriously. And there's corporate sponsorship everywhere.
We'll talk about this more, but I thought that was funny that they put it there, and then the back plot of what's really going on is exactly that, and it's like that's what's actually happening in this movie. So it's like, is it kind of Inception, what's going on? And I was like, are they now? I feel like I need to go to Starbucks for some reason.
Yeah, was it like green is the new orange is the new pink,
yep,
or whatever the colors were.
Yeah,
so why don't we talk about that, about Josie and the Pussycats? Josie, Valerie, and Melody, how did the three of them do? Did they feel like they were those characters?
So, yes, I think they did. They picked good actresses for those parts. You've got Rachel Lee Cook as Josie of Josie and the Pussycats. She's not really the leader of the band. She's the de facto leader. That's kind of the whole arc of the movie, is that they try to make her the central star. And she's like, but I'm not. It's just the Pussycats. They're like, well, we need a name on it. So it's Josie and the Pussycats. And then, the label tries to make her more of a focus, which is what leads to infighting in a lot of bands. So you have that kind of behind the music feel to this, where it's like, uh-oh, the band was getting big and all of a sudden we're getting ready to break up over tensions inside. Like, that's what they're aiming at with those characters. We have Rosario Dawson as Valerie, who's, you know, clearly like the other founding member that seems to like help write a lot of the songs. And then you have Tara Reid as Melody, who's kind of she's the drummer. She's supposed to also be kind of some comedic piece to this. She's like, she's honestly a great person inside, but she's maybe not the smartest person in the band. You know, that so they do a good job of making them feel like they would make sense as a band. I also want to say, and we're going to talk about the music a lot later, I think the music also makes a lot of sense in this because it sounds like music that would be written by three people of that age at that time. It's very much late 90s alt pop punk rock, and it sounds like a three-piece band. I mean, it's obviously studio-ified, so everything's very clear, but they aren't like, you don't hear horns for no reason. Like, there's not all this crazy stuff that wouldn't just be three girls writing songs that eventually become songs. So they did a good job casting that. I also want to go back one step on the plane when you met Dujour is also when you met the manager, Wyatt, who's Alan Cummings, and he really is kind of like, he's driving this movie forward because he's the one who lands in Riverdale when they crash that plane and ends up trying to find a band because they need a band for this other thing that's already been planned for this like super, super stadium concert that was supposed to be Dujour, but now they need a band for it. So we got to find a band like immediately and get them big and do what we need to do for this background subplot of what's going on with the label. Well, main plot, really, of what's going on with the label. And so that's who he runs into them, literally almost runs into them with his van and decides, here's three girls with instruments. That's going to be a band. I'm going to sign him. But you know Wyatt from the beginning. You're like, okay, well, clearly something's not right. Like, he's clearly a sleazeball. He let this other band, you know, kill them. It's basically without killing himself. He jumped off a plane and just let it drive into the ether. So, you know, he's clearly a bad guy. And he knows that these are not like, he's not really selling a band for what the band is. He's selling a band as a product and he's going to make that product.
I do like the fact that he has a contingency plan for it. But yeah, put Chevy to Levy. And that means we get out of the plane and jump. Mm-hmm. Like, this has happened so many times that they have a contingency plan for when a band discovers that they're being used.
Yes, because it was all based off of when the band was like, hey, did you hear this in the backtrack of this song? Like, we never heard this before. We don't know what that is. And that's when he was like, the next one. Disposable band. Soup du jour. On to the next one. And I think when he almost runs them over, he has already been to the record store. So we know that there's something nefarious going on with Wyatt because he gives this record store a CD and he's just like, play this, right? And then everybody in the store is like, I need to buy orange stuff. I need to go to Starbucks. I need to go to Abercrombie and Fitch. I need a new pair of shoes. So you know that this song, so with the reference from before on the airplane plus the CD, it's like, okay, he's doing something with the music. So it's like, that's why he needs this other band.
And it's such a spoof too. Like, it's funny because like in that scene you're talking about where they're in the music store and he's playing the song and the girl who works there is like, oh, it's garbage. And he's like, he's like, there are people, we like people who are independent thinkers. Come with me. We want your opinion. And then he kidnaps her.
He just like shoves her in a van, never to be seen again.
So the other characters you have that go along with them, you've got the two Alexes, Alexander and Alexandria.
Right.
What do you think of that pair?
I mean, they're also kind of comedic pieces, right? And in fact, Alexander's their manager, their local manager. He only manages them. He doesn't go to their own concert. Again, you don't even need a manager for a band, but that's okay. He is their manager, and Alexandra is his sister, who's kind of his assistant, I guess. And they even say, like, when they're later on in the movie, they're like, why are you even here to her? And she's like, because I was in the comic. And they're like, what? Right. Never mind. So, like, that character is there because it was there in the comic. She's kind of like their foil. You know, she doesn't, not for the overarching power of the plot, but she doesn't like them, right? So she's willing to tell them, like, yeah, well, maybe it's because you guys are terrible. Like, she's not a fan, and she's clearly not on their side ever. But when it comes down to it, they do know her, and they trust her brother at least a little bit. So she's in there. I like them in the movie. I thought they were fun.
I thought they were dumb. I was like, come on. I mean, like, they were in the comic, I guess. But otherwise, it's like it really does nothing for the plot that he's a manager other than to reinforce the fact that they really don't need him. And there's just fluff characters that nobody cares about. It's like they show up later in the movie and I'm like, oh, they're here again. And again, they do nothing. They do nothing. So they haven't been a part of any major decisions. I don't think there's any really I think later on, I think he helps Josie redeem herself. But other than that, like, there could have been another plot way for that to happen. Like, I really feel they were unnecessary. 100%.
I think the only real piece they had to have there, other than being there at the beginning to kind of show like, yeah, this is this band's not going anywhere. Their manager's not very good.
Right.
Is he kind of essentially helps convince them to sign this label, this deal with the label. Like they were kind of like, what? I don't know if I want to sign it. And he's like, hold on. And tries to like get them to sign that deal. So that's the only thing he needs to be there for. Other than that, it's kind of to have in the later scenes, people that will remind them of Riverdale and their basic like their friendship before they were a big band and all these other things like that. But they don't need to be there. You're right. They're probably unnecessary. I mean, everything. Let's be fair. Everything in this movie is dumb in a way, though, that
thank
works.
You. You have just validated my feelings about this movie.
I like this movie, but it's not like I'm not telling anyone it should win any awards. I'm not telling anybody it's one of the best movies of the year or of the decade. But, well, we'll get into it. There are some things about this movie that are incredible.
So I think the point of those characters is really meant to be the illustration. This is a spoof of the industry. So they're supposed to illustrate the hangers-on, people that don't do anything for your career whatsoever, but they're there. And, you know, they're saying they do something for him. The only reason he gets them to sign it is because he gets 15%.
Well, right, right. He's looking at it as, finally, this band I've been, quote, managing is going to make some money for me. It's my only band, so I better make some money off it. But it's still, it's just to have... They already kind of at least trust him as their manager. So to have him say, well, let's talk about this deal, then it at least keeps him in the conversation.
They kick him out of the bathroom where the conversation is being had, though. So he kind of was like, well, maybe think about it. But then he's not actually there when they make their decision.
No. But Alexandra is. So as
yeah,
part of that
doing
duo,
what?
She is in there.
Standing there, doing
standing
nothing. And
they're awkwardly telling them they're not very good.
Well, speaking of the actual foil of the movie, I mean, there's Wyatt, but there's also Wyatt's partner, Fiona, who's actually his boss.
Well, I was going to say, it's not really his partner, it's Wyatt's boss, the mastermind of Megacorp or whatever their label is.
Yeah, and she's played by Parker Posey, who actually got top billing
Love.
In this movie.
Not a surprise.
Because she's probably, well, I mean, there was a lot of named people in the movie. I was surprised. But yeah, I could see why she has top billing, 100%.
Especially in this era, she's a big name. She had done a lot of things. She's still a big name. But at that point, she had been in a ton of things around then. Alan Cummings as well, also a big name, but not as big and kind of always kind of like the supporting character. So
I would rather watch Blade Trinity with Parker Posey than this movie any day of the week.
Now, this has got to be, I want to say, one of our strangest movies that we ever covered. I think the strangest movie we ever covered was Garfield. That seems
really
sort of out of place. And what's funny about it is there is a connection between this movie and Garfield. Alan Cumming and Breckenmeyer are both in Garfield.
You're correct.
Oh, that's right.
That's true. Breckenmeyer in this movie is one of the members of Du Jour, which that's the other thing is Du Jour, they didn't just get like a boy band or random people. These are other people who were somewhat big names at the time. You got Seth Green, you got Breckenmeyer, you've got, I can't remember his name, but the guy that was in Scrubs. Like there's people in this movie that you're like, I know all those guys. They've been in things. And it's like, yeah. And they're in this movie for like 10 minutes tops total across the movie as the band Du Jour.
Yeah, the off in the first 10 minutes.
Well, you think they do.
Oh, that's true. I don't want... now we're not the
spoiler.
We already spoiled it. The spoiler tag came up way earlier. We're safe to spoil
true.
It now. Although, for them to come back, they don't really do much. But they aren't dead, so that's positive.
And you don't know... I think you only see one of their faces. The other two are just in full body cast. So they're like, Seth Green wasn't available for this time. So he's just an extra in a body cast.
It brings up a good point. Tara Reid's character is... She's played as like the blonde bimbo, right? She's supposed to be the idiot. But she is one of the most insightful characters in this movie because she says, "No, oh, we don't know they're dead. No, they could still be alive." She also says that the Wyatt character is very insecure about himself, and here are all his problems. And we find out at the end of the movie
that's
very
exactly
true.
That's exactly it, yeah.
If you listen to what she says as she's going along, everything she says, except for the really dumb stuff, is true. But nobody believes her. But she's not like, she's like, oh, no one's believed me. She says these things. And you're like, wait, that actually happens later in this movie.
Yeah. Well, because they pepper those little insights in with all the things that are supposed to make her look a little less smart. Like when she's in the shower singing Happy You Know It, and then she claps her hands every time and she drops her soap or the whatever, the sponge, whatever it is she's using. Actually, it's a stuffed thing of McDonald's fries because earlier she said she wanted a Big Mac.
And she's vegetarian.
And she's a vegetarian because it was in the song, in the subliminal messaging in the song they're putting in. It's look, the movie is kind of dumb, but it pushes it forward and it does all the things that make it funny and make it a parody is like it's a perfect snapshot of late 90s MTV VH1. Like that's in there when they go to the studio and they're showing everything. They even say like, hey, we have this is what we do when these bands outweigh their, you know, outlive their usefulness for our plans. And it's behind the music. Like they use that as part of the reason of how they cover up what happened to these bands. Like, oh, yeah, we have a whole show about it.
It is truly the music industry complex.
Yeah, it's great.
Can I talk about Tara Reid and Carson Daly?
Oh, yeah. They end up dating after this movie.
They were dating, yes. But he actually messed her up. So she actually, this is so distressing. After, you know, dating Carson Daly and breaking up, she had an eating disorder that developed. And so when you see her in future projects after Josie and the Pussycats, she's very skinny. And that's because of her breakup with Carson Daly. So the part where she beats the shit out of him, I was really hoping that that was real because of her trauma that she went through because of this relationship. I'm like, man.
And she ended up choosing, was it Matt Damon?
Yeah, Matt Damon. Yeah. The poster. But it was just funny because in the movie, he was like, you know, you're kind of cool. And if we weren't out here to kill you, I'd actually date you. And then they dated and then it messed her up. So I was like, man.
So the one thing this movie is a lot of is that there are a lot of like montages or like musical numbers. Like it really is like a long video. I would say the first one we get of the band is that bowling alley scene,
which is the intro of the movie. It's got the credits over it. It introduces you to who the band is, who all these other side characters are that are at least local to Riverdale, the love interest. Like, that's all there in the song. But every one of these montages is the full song. It's not like they use 30 minutes of a song. They use the
30
full
seconds.
Two and a half. Or yeah, it feels like 30 minutes sometimes. But it is the full 2.5 to 3 minutes of the song, which all the songs for this movie are written for this movie by actual pop stars of the time or of the 80s. Like, they have real songwriters putting out songs that would make sense to be in a pop punk. You know, if these were all Avril Lavigne songs, you'd believe it. Like, this is the kind of music that they're trying to push out. And it is perfect. The music for this movie is 100% the reason to keep watching it. And each of these montages, yes, it's a full music video. And that makes it work. Otherwise, if these were shorter, this movie would be 20 minutes long.
I gotta say, I enjoyed the bowling alley montage. And I enjoyed the bowling alley scene because I can relate to them at that point. Jeremy had said this is kind of what you go through as a band. It's also what you go through in indie comics, where it's like you have this vision, you have this passion project, you're putting yourself out there and people basically ignore you. But you have this dream and you keep pushing because someday, you know, you're hoping that someone will discover you. And so I can relate to that. That's the only montage one I enjoyed. After that, I wanted to punch myself in the face.
Oh, no, there's so many good ones.
God, can we talk about the makeup one? Because
oh, yeah.
I wanted to
I want to do the corporate sponsorship first. The all one right, that where they're, right. There's a montage before that, and that's where they're going to the city. And we're seeing, like, they're going there to go there to sing outside the street. They're going to make it happen, right?
Yeah.
They're going to take control of this. And we get to see a series of corporate sponsorships for a montage.
Yes. Subliminal mind messages, which is what this movie's all about.
Right.
Yeah, this movie has over 70 ad placements in the movie.
Oh my God.
That's low. I thought we were in triple digits. So
yeah, what's funny about it is they received no money whatsoever. This was all done for free because they didn't want to actually take money because the whole point of the movie was to spoof that companies do that. So they want to be so over the top, no company could complain.
That's still surprising, though, that they got away with that without companies complaining that they were in a movie about that. But hey, good for them.
They still got free advertising.
They got free advertising.
And they didn't ever like crap on the things like the Target plane, right? It's there. There's Target in the back. But then no point to someone say like, because Target's the shittiest place on the planet. Like, they were very good about the sponsoring, I guess. But
yeah, like they're seeing where like Rosario Dawson's in her hotel room and it's all Target. She's like hugging the Target doll, Target sheets. And then like Jeremy, you mentioned the shower at Tyra Reed, where she has all the McDonald's stuff.
Oh yeah. There's McDonald's logos on the, monogrammed on the shower door itself. Pretty great.
Gosh, and I mean, like, it's just that montage you're talking about, though, was like Abercrombie and Fitch and Adidas. And I mean, it's just, it was everything that was kind of hot at that time. I remember living through the, you know, 80s and 2000s where it's like everybody had to have Starbucks and everybody had to have the, you know, anything that you can think of in that montage. It's like those were the places that we as young adults and as teenagers were going to.
Yeah, so they were the hot brands.
They were the hot brands. And I was like, I wonder if we were all subliminally, I'm going to just keep you saying that word.
I'm going to go back and cut this and edit it so it goes on for like a good 10 minutes.
Subliminally.
That's how the show ends. Just that for 20 minutes.
There you go. So glad I can help.
But Lori, the next montage is that makeover scene where they're going in there and it's that classic, like, transform these ugly girls into something beautiful, though they're not ugly, obviously.
The first half is the recording studio and then which I wanted to point out, the recording studio montage is not, it's of all the things in this movie that I found unrealistic, that's the most unrealistic because actually recording music is the most miserable process on the planet. And that actually looked fun. Like, they were all like, look, we're set up like we were playing live, and then we're playing, and then they just push a button and it makes it sound good. Where's the part where they have to play a solo badly in front of everybody in the studio and their band for 2.5 hours till everyone just goes home? That's the part that wasn't in here. You need to do that.
Are you looking for realism from Josie and the Pussycats?
Look, I'm saying if you're going to have a movie about being in a band that's just kind of failing their way through life and at the same time somehow get lucky, the part where they're in the studio has got to be the most important part where everyone in the band has hours of self-doubt. You need that in there. You got to have it in there.
Well, I think this is it's just a testament to what's happening in the future, because really they push that button. That's AI just working
that's
on
the true. That
it's
is
an
true.
AI producer.
They've been doing that for years, though, with like the voice, the vocals, like create what? How do they do that, Jeremy?
The auto-tune. Like, it's
yeah,
the auto-tune.
That's what I meant. That. So like that's been going on forever.
It has been. I will say AI music, as much as I hate the concept and I don't like AI art in any way, really. Like, it's really obnoxious as an artist, even though I don't, you know, I'm not a physical artist, I'm a music artist, whatever. But like, I hate the idea of it, right? Creativity is not a thing you should like manufacture.
No.
That said, I have a friend that does nothing but make fake songs in AI for the purpose of being fake songs that are clearly fake, and they do a great job of that. So I will say it for if you go out saying these are not real things, it's fine with me, but I still don't like it. Like, I hate the idea, and I hate that sometimes those songs are quite good, and you have to catch yourself going like, oh, that's because they're all ripped off from other good songs. But the point is they still put out stuff that is believably a real song, and that's terrifying and awful.
I want to put in my two cents because I'm also affected by AI in what I do, because, of course, AI generated art is a big problem in our industry and people are starting to be OK with using it for certain situations like marketing and music. And I feel like AI should be curing cancer and doing my taxes and doing that kind of stuff, the mundane things that we don't want to do. Leave the creative stuff, the writing, the arts, to the humans. Leave us. That's our genre. That's where we excel. There is no way the AI will ever live up to the things that humans are capable of creating. And if the overlords come for me someday because it's on this recording, that's why.
One little thing I would disagree with is I would not use AI for my taxes, because that is where I get really creative.
That's true. That is true.
Now the IRS is coming for you. There you go.
They've been here before. They know how to get here.
Yeah, we're at least close. They can just drive down the street to.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, let's go back to this makeover / studio montage.
Do we have to?
Yes, we have to. How'd you feel about that montage, besides the fact that it was not authentic enough for this studio session?
The makeover. I want to rant about the makeover. No, there is no reality where women are in the chair laughing and giggling while they are dyeing your hair and pulling out your eyebrows and anything else that happened. They're not. They're not playing around. They're not throwing stuff at each other. Those people would kick you out. They have a job to do. Sit down and shut up so I can do your hair. And no, they went in beautiful. They came out looking almost exactly the same. I think Rosario Dawson's hair was slightly styled different and Tara Reid's hair was curlier. And that's it. Like, there was nothing that happened in that montage, and I wanted to punch them all in the face. Thank you. I'm off my soapbox.
If, and this is going to actually discount what I just said about the recording part, is that at the same time, they're all singing the songs while they're doing it. So if you think about it like a music video, it makes total sense, and it's fine. But that also means the recording section that I hated does the same things. You know, neither of us are happy. That's how it goes.
And it leads into the media blitz that they have for their new album. And I do like the fact that they're showing them like climbing the charts and they're singing at various venues. At the end, she goes, wow, it feels like it's only been a week.
Yeah. Because it's not even been a week. That when you're supposed to sign that band, they have that stadium concert set up for like 3 days from then. So they had to get a band, get them ready, get an album recorded and out to the people in 3 days.
And produce those headsets.
Oh, yeah. Those were ready for. Now, I guess the only thing they had to get was the cat parts, right? Because why would you have cat headsets for du jour? But they had to have had the technology ready ahead of time.
100%. You know, there's extra subliminal in that from Timu.
I do like, though, that, as you said, Jeremy, before, that the behind the music was really a part of this apparatus to convince people. But they released that Rosario Dawson's character is watching TV when she's feeling down about the band. And they added Josie and she's not there anymore. And she watches the captain and Tennille and the chief.
Yes. And the chief was Babyface. It's Babyface and makeup. Babyface also wrote some of the songs on this this soundtrack. So I liked that in there.
It was just funny.
Yeah.
It was all about, was it? We come first before the band. I should have gotten that in writing.
Yeah, yeah. It was definitely like, oh, a guy that went through exactly what I'm going through right now in my mind that I'm getting, you know, replaced in this band because I'm not the star. I'm not the captain, nor Tennille.
I'm the chief. And then we finally are introduced to Fiona through this industry-wide party. We get to see her in the background a little bit. She's on the phone. But the first time our main characters actually meet Fiona for the first time, that scene where she's coming down the stairs, if you have the DVD, which, yes, I do, they had the extended version of that scene. It's a long musical number.
I don't have the extended DVD or whatever. On the version that you can stream off Amazon, if you want to pay for it, it is a slowed down, jazzier version of one of the Josie and the Pussycats songs. Is it not that song in your version? Is it some longer thing?
Same song.
Okay.
Just goes on and on and on.
And I was like, that's going to be crazy if they like bothered recording a slowed down version of their song because of whatever they had that was licensed they couldn't keep. Okay, that makes more sense. It's just an extended scene of that, which is already unnecessary.
I am aghast that there is a longer version of her coming down the stairs. And I'm so glad I didn't have to watch it.
What did you think of when they actually get to sit with Fiona for the first time when she serves them all the snacks?
Oh, well, she tries to have a slumber party. It's basically come back to my office while there's this party going on downstairs, this industry party. We're going to go up to like this fake bedroom and hang out and have snacks and try to braid our hair because I never, you know, I want to be your best friend. But it wasn't that's when you see Fiona where it's not, I have this, you know, I'm a criminal mastermind. It's like, oh, she is, but also she's just sad and kind of lonely. She wants some friends. She's hoping they'll be her friend. And then it's like, okay, I see where we're going with this. Because that's also the first time she slips up and she has a lisp, but the character has a lisp, not
Parker Posey. Yeah.
Not Parker Posey, although she might. She adds it if she does. But the character has a very pronounced lisp that falls out at times. And the first time is in one of these parties where you're like, wait a minute, something's going on here too. Even though it's obvious that something's going on. That's like one more layer of the what's going on with Fiona. But I thought it was a good introduction to the character. Because again, you've only got 90 minutes to try to give everyone's backstory. That's an easy way to kind of explain the two pieces of Fiona. The part that's this criminal mastermind, but then why? What's underneath that? And that's the slumber party.
I hated this scene. Listen, I hate it when women are portrayed as these daft, like this was all like the stupid stereotypes of a slumber party that you get as a girl. Like, oh, I'm going to eat this chip. Oh, I'm such a fat pig. Don't look at me. I'm 115 pounds. I'm so fat. Like, shut. No one cares about that. No one wants to braid your hair. This is not what happens at sleepovers, okay? Oh, my God. And the fact that she was this mastermind that was, like, plotting, you know, all of these things, and then this juxtaposition, I was like, is she lying to them, or is this actually her character? This can't be her character, because she is plotting all this nefarious stuff and has been pulling off like killing pop stars and blowing up things and talking with foreign dignitaries. And now she's over here asking about, do you like my hair and Pringles? Like, come on. Come on. Like, again, I was just like, punch me in the face because I cannot stand this.
Well, actually, we did forget to mention that first scene we did see her in was when she's talking to those foreign dignitaries.
Yes.
Right.
About the music industry and why it works the way it works. And we get, I think, the best cameo of the movie.
Eugene Levy? Yeah.
That
incredible
video
cameo.
Was amazing. That was the only scene that I liked.
He was on the set for one of the American Pie movies when he did that cameo. He was not originally going to be there, but they contracted him and had him call in.
And yeah. Tara Reid was in American Pie. So there's your connection there.
Yes.
It's all part of the Garfield universe. It's all spilling out. Garfield, American Pie, Josie and the Pussycats. It's all here.
Kevin Bacon. It's all connected.
I think we need to create a Garfield universe.
The Garfield it. Cinematic universe.
Yep.
Stop it.
Well, we're gonna get the V-verse like we said we were supposed to from the V from Vendetta.
Listen to our show and don't do the things. When we say not to do them, don't do them.
I do want to talk about the TRL scene. You kind of mentioned it earlier, Lori, but I love the fact that when they do that scene, there's the entire audience is filled with cutouts of actual actors.
Which is hilarious.
Because it's the trick is they're going to send the non-Josie Pussycats off to TRL, but then when they get there, it's clearly not TRL. It's all cardboard cutouts of stuff. TRL's just like taped on top of TVs. And a guy that says he's Carson Daly that's not Carson Daly, that was Aries Spears, comes in and says he's Carson Daly. But then the real Carson Daly shows up, so they're like, wait a minute, what's going on? Why would Carson Daly now come? Maybe like this is a staging area for TRL. They even trick you as the viewer for this. But then it turns out that both Aries Spears, as whoever this comedian is that's not Aries Spears, and Carson Daly are there for a specific purpose, and that is to kill the other two pussycats.
It's because he likes doing impressions.
Yes.
Because he's got, was he said, some of his fingers?
His fingers, well, his fingernails have the polish on them like Carson Daly. That was his point. He's like, clearly I'm Carson Daly, check out the fingernails. And both the girls are like, oh, that's a good point.
Was it, this is not Total Request Live, this is Total Request Dead.
Oh, that was the worst line in the movie. Arguably in the worst line in any movies we've watched is that line. And I know it's supposed to be bad, but it's so bad that it loops back around to being kind of funny and then terrible again. When I worked at the mall years ago, same time I worked at the comic store, a guy came in and we were two doors down from a Sam Goody. And so he came in, he was asking for something. He's like, I just came from Sam Goody, but it's so expensive there. It's like, it's Sam Batty. And then he just stared at me like I was going to be like, that's the most incredible thing I've ever heard. It was the worst line. This was as bad as that.
Did you stare at that man? And
I just stared for a second. Oh, I had, but I was working there, so I'd be like, ah, that's great, sir. Anyway, it was so bad. It was just like one of those, like, it was, I cringed without knowing what cringe was at the time.
Did you enjoy the Bill Cosby impersonation?
Terrible.
It's terrible. Well, it was not a terrible Bill Cosby impersonation, but remember when this movie came out, everyone didn't really know that Bill Cosby is terrible.
Yeah, so it's that didn't age well. Also, Carson Daly, terrible actor. Terrible.
Oh, yeah, no. Awful.
Terrible.
That's why I was kind of just,
stop it.
I mean, he's not, I don't know anything he's been in other than like
this.
Total Request Live things where he's a host. Like, I don't know if there's any other movies where Carson Daly acts where he's not Carson Daly.
No.
And so
he,
in this movie, he did the same. He did Carson Daly.
Stop it. Him and what's his face from Bush, Gavin, how he somehow got into Constantine. Like, no. You cannot act. Please don't
Gavin
be in
Rossdale.
Movies. Yeah, Gavin Rossdale. Where he was like, delicious or something stupid. And then Keanu shoots him. And it was like that level of cringe. And I was just like, he must have already been with Tara Reid in order to be in that movie. She got him in.
Well, or again, the whole plot of the movie was that they tie this MTV and VH1 and all that into this same plot. I think it works to have him in the movie for that role. But, you know,
personally, I think they were going to have the other actor with the impressions, you know, because he was like, I'm Carson Daly. And they were like, nah. Right. And then Tara's like, I actually know Carson Daly. He'll come on here. I'll get him on here. And so they got him. And I'm sure Carson was just like, what am I doing? They're like, take this bat and swing it around and say these lines, and he was terrible. Could have gone without that.
After this, we get our next montage again, where...
More montages!
Josie's walking around with a CD man, listening to her own album, and realizes she's being manipulated.
Yes.
By the MS.
This is where my kid walked in when I was watching this movie and told me how dumb it was. And she's 11. It's when Josie was being a jerk. How
so
terrible.
I mean, again, it's very ham-fisted in how they do all these segments. But I think the movie's not targeted at somebody who's 11 today.
This movie would not work for anyone
who's 11 today.
Exactly. This would be 100% lost on them, not knowing the 90s and the early 2000s and none of that music. And like, she was completely lost. She only watched like a few minutes because she was doing something else. But she came down. She was like, you like this movie? I said, no. And then she was like, it looks dumb. And then got up and walked away. I was like, okay. So it's definitely a generational thing.
I mean, you brought up earlier the K-pop Demon Hunters, which I think has the same idea as this. It's done different. My kids love that movie. The music's
she
not
loves
bad
that
either.
Movie.
Like, it's
yes.
fine. But I think this is that same angle, just 20 years earlier.
And way worse.
Well, it's live action. I would argue if you do a live action K-pop Demon Hunters, it would have been terrible.
They're going to.
And it will be terrible.
I think everybody will love it. I don't know. I think there's like you. I think you had your thumb on the pulse of why it's different is because K-pop Demon Hunter was not supposed to be a parody.
No.
And it wasn't. But this one is trying to do, I think it's trying to be like, what did I put in the notes? It was like Austin Powers meets We Are Spinal Tap. And I mean, like, it's just trying to do too many things. And I don't think it accomplished anything.
Yeah,
if you go back farther to like the Beatles movies, like that's what this reminds me of. Hard Day's Night or things like that. Again, that's not going to be the audience you're targeting with this movie.
Yeah.
And I'm even not in the audience that should have. I mean, those movies are older than I am. But I still think that's what you're aiming at is those kind of music movies where it's like tongue in cheek about a band, except that's a real band, right? Where this is not a real band. And that's what they're trying to spoof here, but then modernize it for the MTV era.
Yeah, and they're also supposed to be spoofing the Spice Girls movie.
Oh, yeah. I forgot Spice World existed. Yes, yes, Spice World as well.
Yeah, so it's really a takedown of that movie. So if you have not seen that one, some of these jokes might just, you know, might miss them, I guess. But after this montage, I know, Laura, you love montages. We discover the secret, or at least Josie discovers a secret of what's actually happening.
We knew the secret way ahead of Josie. But yes, she finally figures it all out.
She does. And she is now taken captive by Fiona. And she's forced to go do this concert that they've been avoiding or talking about this whole time, this massive concert for a band that's only been found 3 days ago. Mm-hmm. That concert, by the way, was actually a live band. They actually had a band playing from some, I forgot, it was like a Canadian stadium or something like that. And they told the audience, like, they're going to, this local band would play for them. They all cheer and yell. And then they would actually then put Josie on the stage and just film those fan reactions to the other band. So that's what they were listening to. But how'd you feel about the concert and the final fight?
I mean, I've already said that I like the music for this movie. So the concert itself was fine. The final fight is goofy. Again, it very much felt like it would have fallen out of a cartoon. Like, it's not like a real fight. It's like, you know, she's going to hit me with a guitar, and then she swings the guitar and misses and hits this panel. And like the other guy like trips and even like does this like almost wrestling off the rope style maneuver out of nowhere for no reason. Like, it's a very goofy, slapsticky fight, but it works for, like, again, it's very Scooby-Doo feeling, like the bad guys in this movie, to the point where at the end, they're clearly like pulling off what their costumes have been this whole time to show who they really are. It's very Scooby-Doo. I thought it was fine. And the concert I like because it's, you know, this is their chance to play a concert in front of a bunch of people. Yeah, they came to hear another song. They're going to play a song you don't know, and they don't have any of the overproduced tools that were ready for this concert to begin with. Like, here's just three of us playing a song we wrote. Hopefully you like it. Now, sure, it was still an overproduced song that was not be what they sound like live, but it worked, and it made the point that, like, oh, this really is about the music and they really do like it. Fine.
It was dumb. I'm sorry. The concert, okay, I want to reiterate what Jeremy said. The music was good. The final fight was so stupid. It was over the top. And I mean, like, again, this is what they're going for. Over the top parody, like Roadrunner versus Coyote type antics, wrestling moves. The dumb one all of a sudden is fighting a martial arts expert and wins.
Oh, yeah.
Like, come on. Them two having a slap fight. I was like, can we be done? Can we be? At that point, I was ready to turn off the movie. I was done.
Well, that's the whole point of Tara Reid's character is that, you know, we think she's an idiot and she acts like one. Like, remember the whole thing about, you know, being in two places at once? She just runs around the house to be in two places at once. That, no, she actually knows stuff. She knows how to do some kung fu fighting, some martial arts. I do like how the villain's plan is so cartoonish, is we're going to put you in this car and blow it up unless you go on stage and sing. And they already have the behind the music, you know, clip play for them. It's already produced, ready to go, because it's just great. But it is very cartoony the way they end it, but it is nice seeing them on stage and playing the song. From this, guys, this movie is, what, 98 minutes long?
Mm-hmm.
Did it feel like 98 minutes?
I say no, and I say that because I love the soundtrack of this movie. I own the soundtrack of this movie. Clearly, I've covered songs off the soundtrack of this movie. They're all original songs. There are a couple covers in it, but they're really minimal. A lot of it is, in fact, one of the covers is the original Josie and the Pussycats theme from the cartoon, and the rest is all original music written by actual artists of the time that work really well. So if you like those songs and you don't hate montages, then this movie flies. It moves because it's literally a music video. 4 to 5 minutes, music video, then 4 to 5 minutes, then a music video, and then 5 to 6 minutes, then a music video. So I thought this movie moves very quickly. However, if you hate the music, I can see that this movie is probably nails on a chalkboard for the entire 98 minutes.
That's kind of where I was, nails on the chalkboard. I'm just going to say, you really talked about how great the music was. We could have just listened to the music and not watched the movie and still been happy.
It'd been great. And a great episode.
That's what I recommend to people. Don't watch. I'm ahead of myself. It was 98 minutes, way too long for me. Yeah, I could have. No, and so about halfway through, I actually probably stopped watching so much as I was listening to the movie because I just couldn't stand it. So thank you. That is my.
You're not alone in that. I mean, the movie did not do well in theaters, and the album did far better than the movie itself. And Jeremy, I actually think I sent you that it's out on vinyl now, too.
Yeah, I don't have it on vinyl. Paul does, but I have this on CD. And again, the songs are performed by Kay Hanley of Letters to Cleo. Like, they got real artists to do it. The songs are great. It's a great soundtrack. Even the du jour songs that are on there are well worth listening to.
So while we talked about the soundtrack a little bit, what, Jeremy, is our local music expert, who were the actual singers behind this?
Well, the singer, like the main singer, the lead vocalist is Kay Hanley of Letters to Cleo. And then they got a whole bunch of different people to write them. There's Babyface, like I mentioned, wrote some songs. Jane Wiedlin of the Go-Go's wrote a song. There is Adam Duritz of the Counting Crows, a guy from Fountains of Wayne. Like, there's a bunch of guys in the music industry, people, not guys, a bunch of people across the music industry who wrote all these tracks. And so they sound like late 90s alt rock pop punk songs, and they're great. So the soundtrack itself is wonderful. Find it now, listen to it. If you watch the movie, all of those songs are played in full as part of these montages, and they're great. I don't know. I love the soundtrack of this movie. I mean, this is the kind of music I enjoy anyway. Like, this when this came out, this was like, yeah, this is, I mean, it's commercialized pop versions of the kind of music I liked at the time. So I still like it now. And like I said, we've covered one of the songs on here. It's fun. They're fun songs.
I got nothing. The music is good. Hey.
Well, they released, not only they released the Josie and Pussycats album, they did release a Du Jour album too.
No, they did not. Come
the
on.
The CD, you can get the CD. It's a split. It's two songs on the Du Jour album, and those are thrown on the back of the CD. I don't know if they're on the vinyl or not, but they,
yeah, the vinyl comes, a smaller disc, record that has all the Du Jour songs.
Yeah, it's got Backdoor Lover, and then the Du Jour song they play in the record store.
The question is, why? Why did they do this?
Because they took the time to write these songs as if they were realistic, like they would have been big at the time. I think that's great.
The album went gold. It was not like it did poorly. It did fantastic.
I think it's just a big joke, and I'm just not part of the joke.
That actually brings us to our next question. When this movie came out, it failed. It did not do well at all. Nobody wanted to watch it because the people thought it was vapid. They thought it was another Spice Girl movie. Though it was actually supposed to be a giant meta joke or a parody on commercialism and the pop music industry as a whole. My question for you guys is, when you watch this for the first time, did you get the joke?
I did. I understood what they were aiming at, although admittedly, the first time I watched it was in the theater and I definitely had some drinks beforehand. So I just thought it was fun and I enjoyed it. But I've watched the movie countless times since. I know what they're aiming at. But I think the biggest thing is that the music is good, like we mentioned. So that makes this movie work. If the music was bad, it wouldn't work. Also, I went back and rewatched the trailer for this movie just to see, like, what are the original trailers for this look like? And it does not in any way imply that this will be a parody. It looks like it's going to be a Spice World movie, but about a non-real band. So I can see why people either weren't interested in seeing it or did go to see it and they're like, what the hell is this? Like, it's not what it looks like from the trailers. If you want to see another similar movie that came out a little bit after this, they made a movie of Jem and the Holograms that is absolute trash. Same plot. Essentially, it's the same exact movie, but the music is awful. And it sucks.
So I would not bother seeing Jem. I was just saying. Also, I would not bother seeing this movie. I didn't get, I mean, like, I'm intelligent enough to know what they were trying to do. And I feel like it just missed all the marks. Like I was saying, like, they were trying to be like Austin Powers type funny. And I didn't laugh out loud at anything. It's more like laughing at the movie because it's so dumb. It perpetrated a ton of stupid, you know, stereotypes of blondes and girls. And it just, it was so vapid to me, like you said, where it just wasn't funny. I don't know if they were trying to, like, the commercialism, I got that. The subliminal messaging, I get that. I just don't think it executed well because I didn't feel good about this movie. Just give me the soundtrack and I'm not going to swear, but F off.
This movie, Laura, you might be happy to hear this. This movie was actually supposed to kick off a live-action Hanna-Barbera cinematic universe.
Oh, God, no.
God, could you imagine a live Jabberjaw? Oh, boy.
Like, just no. I mean, they tried, too. The CW had, like, the Archie series, right? They called it Riverdale. Failure.
That's because it was on the CW. It could have been an incredible show. Nobody knows.
Just terrible. Don't do it. Like, make something else. Anything else.
The other thing I want to point out is that this movie did so badly, it ended careers.
Yes.
Or postponed careers. Like the directors, Harry Elefant and Deborah Kaplan, this was their last film they ever directed.
It was that bad.
Yeah, they did other work, but they never got back into this one. And Rachel Lee Cook and Tara Reid, both kind of, their careers kind of stalled after this.
I would say that both of those actresses did other things after this. Tara Reid's career went in a different path. She's now like the Sharknado lady and does some other like direct-to-video stuff.
And
that's
video games.
Oh, does she do a lot of video games?
Yes.
There you go. They're not forgotten. Like Rachel Lee Cook still does a few things here and there too. I know she has like a Lifetime movie, which, hey, that's more than I've got going on. But Rosario Dawson's doing a ton of stuff. She was in Disney properties, like the Star Wars stuff. She's still out there doing things, bigger than she was at the time.
Yeah, she's the only one who sort of made it out of it. She did Rent in 2005. She did Sin City in 2005. And then eventually did like DMZ, a TV show.
No, you're missing one. The one that took her up to that level was Men in Black.
Oh, yeah, she was a Men in Black.
That's what came right after Josie and the Pussycats. This was Men in Black. And that if it wasn't for that one, she probably would have gone the same way. But I was looking at Rachel Lee Cook, like, I remember her from She's All That. Like, I thought that was where she was going to take off, right? And she's like, Jeremy, you've said, like, she has consistently worked. She has. But it's all low-key stuff, like B actor, and then, like, voice over work. She did Kingdom Hearts, and she's done, I forget what else, but a few reoccurring voice acting in video games. So she is working, but I don't feel like she'll ever get back to that mainstream, you know. Not like Rosario Dawson, who's now Ahsoka, you know. It's not the same. So, interesting.
So there were some other choices for some of the actresses in these roles, and I'll sort of get your take and see if, would you have chosen a different one? So Josie, as we know, she was, you know, Rachel Lee Cook, but they were thinking about going with Maggie Gyllenhaal.
I mean, it seems silly, but I can't say it wouldn't have worked, but I can't see it now.
Oh, I hate her. Don't put her. It's like she ruined Batman. Like, come on. Don't put her in anything. Thanks.
Well, if you don't like that one, the other choice they're going with was Zooey Deschanel.
I like Zooey.
That one would have made sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, she would have been fine.
She's kind of the quirky, she could pull off
and
that
music. She's a musician.
Music.
She does play music and could have pulled off some of that maybe without having to get another person sing all those songs, but.
Yep, and Valerie, they're looking at was a Brandy Norwood.
Oh, that's Brandy. Brandy the pop artist, Brandy. Yeah, see, that's she's such a name that was just her first name. When you put her last name, I was like, I don't know who that is. Okay, yeah, I mean, again, but I think at that point, even then, she was too big for this.
I think she made the smart choice by not being in this movie.
The other one was Aaliyah.
Mm-hmm. Aaliyah,
too big
yeah.
for this. Too big too for big. This.
Again, and it's like, especially for Val. Val's the drummer, right?
No, Val's...
Val was Rosario Dawson. Yeah, okay. That would have made sense.
I think if you don't have all musicians doing it, which I think would have been a mistake, I think.
Yes.
I think having actual musicians do it, because then it bleeds into, like, what is it they really do? Does it make any sense that they'd write this kind of music? Which I don't think either of those people would have written this kind of music.
Well, and did Brandy do acting? I think she
Yeah, she was Moesha.
Did.
She did a bunch
okay,
of
Okay, so
things.
She did. Aaliyah did Queen of the Damned, and I wasn't really impressed with her acting either. So, I mean, like, again, you're pulling in musicians. Their acting might not be so strong, right? So I think they did the right thing with going. Even with the actors, it was bad. Can you imagine having bad acting on top of all the other crap? It would have been worse.
Well, I guess the next question is important. So what did you love about this movie, and what could they have done better to make it great for you?
I'm going to defer. I know what I liked. I've already mentioned a few times. I've hinted that I'm a fan of the music. But other than that, I don't know if there's anything Laurie did like about this movie.
Scrap it. Scrap the whole thing. Start over. That's what they could do better. Try again. It was a valid first attempt. Actually, don't. Just leave it alone and move on with life. Thank you. Thank you for your contribution to bad cinema. It is an example of what not to do on many levels. Thank you for your lesson.
I don't know. Again, I don't know for the notes that it hits that I enjoy. I don't know if I would change much about it because it's not like, again, I don't think this is an amazing movie. I think it's a fun movie and I love the soundtrack. So I wouldn't change much else in this movie. But again, not because it's perfect and shouldn't be changed. But I don't know how you make this any better or worse. Well, I know you can make it worse, but I don't know how you can make it any better than what it is.
I love the music in this movie. I've loved watching it. I've now watched it, I think, 2 or 3 times by this point. I think it does need a sort of some work on the script in the sense of making it funnier. That way you can fully get it's a spoof. It's kind of like the new Naked Gun movie or the remake of the Naked Gun movie. There is no joke in your mind that it's a spoof on the Kingsman series for the most recent one. So I think that's really what it comes down to is I think it missed the mark. So then people didn't know what it was, right? It didn't line up properly. But I love the music of this movie. It's Jeremy, you put it right. It's a fun movie. You put it on the background. No, you're not going to miss anything.
Yeah, no. In fact, for a birthday party for Paul, the bass player for the Subtastics a couple years ago, they rented out a bar and we did the Spice World movie and this movie back to back. That was the entertainment for the evening. And no one paid attention to any damn thing that happened in the movies, but it was a great background thing to have on all night long at this bar. So it was, I mean, I do like this movie for what it is. But again, it's I don't say it's like the comfort food movie idea, because there's plenty of movies I'd rather watch if I'm in a different mood. But just like, it's good as it is. Don't change it. But I can understand why lots of people don't care for it.
So do you want to see them do a reunion tour or remake this movie?
No, they don't need to remake this movie. I think it's fine as it is. I wish more people did see it. I think it would have I think if more people knew what it was and watched it that were from the same mindset, they would appreciate it. And I will share, since I already brought up that we had it at the bar, other than the people who already knew this movie, you could tell that plenty of people there also didn't like the movie. So maybe it's just me and Paul. But I think it's I don't need to see them do anything else with this. Again, there's no need to reboot this property. I don't think any of this is a need. If you're going to do something else with Archie's and throw in Josie and the Pussycats with that world and do a cartoon, whatever. But you don't need to like redo this or start this again as a standalone movie. They tried it. It didn't quite work. I don't think you're going to catch that magic twice. What does work in this?
Magic.
Music-wise? Music-wise. Again, I'm talking entirely music-wise. I don't think you can catch that again. I like K-pop Demon Hunters, but it's a different kind of music. If they went out there and played Green Day, I'd been like, what the hell are we watching? So,
right. I think they need to back away slowly from this and pretend it never happened. Like, I'm going to go to my room and pretend I don't exist. That's what we're doing with this property. We're just going to politely put it in the case because it's a DVD. I don't think I'm much. And then put it in the trash and let it go to the landfill and live out its days. Not biodegrading. Bye.
So I guess I think I know the answer to this question, but just to play it safe, should people go find this movie and experience the glory that is Josie and the Pussycats?
No. Save yourself the time and effort of watching this. I wish I had my 98 minutes left back.
I would say it's not available on anything to stream for free.
No.
So that's the downside, is you're going to have to pay to see if you enjoy this movie. And if you don't, and you're not doing a podcast, then you have wasted 98 minutes of your time. But if you do like it, it's fun and it's good, but it's not worth paying to see every time you want to see it. So find that DVD somewhere at a Goodwill and keep that on your shelf.
I think I have made it a mission to find the DVDs and destroy them just to save humanity.
It's probably a discount bin somewhere.
It's guaranteed.
If you're a young Gen Xer or a old millennial person, like this came out right at that cusp, right? That period. You would probably watch this movie and enjoy the music. That you're not going to have any issue with.
If you watched TRL when it was new, you'd like this movie, at least for that piece of, like, I remember that. That's what you'd remember.
And you have to know the time period. I think, like, my kids would not enjoy this movie because they don't know that time period. So I think it's a piece of its time, not because it aged poorly, but because those things just don't exist anymore. So, like I said, if you're, like I said, a younger Gen X or an older millennial, I think you remember the heyday of MTV and VH1, go watch it. But
I would not pay
$30 for it, or $20 for it, or $15 for it, or $10 for it. You're looking in the discount bin. Go to your secondhand Charles or your flea market, and hopefully you can find a copy of it. Maybe they'll give it to you for free.
Trust your friend Lori. Go listen to the soundtrack.
Well, that brings us to what is your actual rating of it?
Oh, I mean, I got to have three like leopard print gloves in the air for this movie. I love this movie. It's hard for me to talk about how it's not good, because it isn't good, but it's fun. I like watching it. I watched this whole thing just now. Now, was I doing other things? Certainly. I was working on some other things, but the movie was on. I paid attention to it. I've seen it so many times. I just kind of needed a refresher. But again, that soundtrack is so good. So I don't know. I love this movie. Three leopard print gloves up.
I give this a rating of -2 albinos and wide tooth smile. It's the worst of the worst.
Now, if you didn't see the movie, hold on. If you didn't see the movie, just know that that's the title of the movie. It's not that Lori hates albinos. So let's make sure that's on record, that that's a movie reference. And not,
it's a movie
not
reference.
A slight on
I
albino.
Don't really know any albinos.
It'll be in the show notes.
-2 albino and wide tooth smile.
The views of Lori do not represent those in Movie Smash when it comes to albinos.
I don't know any albinos personally, so I can neither say
we can't lose any
like
listeners
or...
at this point. We've got to keep all of them, including our albino listening audience.
There's nothing wrong with being an albino. just when you're Alan Cummings. I'm just going to leave it there. Don't see this movie. Negative
Give
press.
It one set of headphones for the Pussycats, but it shocks you after you start listening to it. So I guess, do you guys have any sort of last minute thoughts about this movie before we head on out for the night?
I mean, I've already shared my thoughts on it. If you are interested in finding the music video slash just the it's really just, I think, a bunch of still images to the music. You can look on YouTube anywhere, Subtastics, and the song is called Three Small Words. And you can hear our version of it. And then listen to the original song, Three Small Words, and see that we're playing it pretty accurately, even though we don't sound anything like Kay Hanley of Letters to Cleo.
That was going to also be my recommendation, is skip the movie and just go see Jeremy in a dress singing this song, Three Small Words. It's a much better time, much more entertaining, and not 98 minutes.
I was going to say much shorter. That's the other.
It's only 45 minutes long.
Our extended remix with the rap breakdown in the middle. Hope you guys enjoy that.
Well, with that, Lori, where can people find you?
Friends, I'm all over the place. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. You can find me anywhere by looking up Lori Calcaterra or Path of the Pale Rider. We just released a digest size of our trade paperback, Path of the Pale Rider, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So you can get a beautiful copy. It makes a great holiday gift for those who want to read something new. Are you tired of the same old crap? Read Path of the Pale Rider. It'll make you question your humanity. It'll make you wonder what makes people human. And it's a completely new take on zombies. So what's not to like?
But is there a Josie and the Pussycat tie-in?
Oh my God, if I did have them, I would throw them to the wolves. I would immediately run them over with a car. Just let's put it that way. Actually, there isn't Josie and the Pussycats. There is another song that I really dislike. And someone is singing it in the book, and I immediately hit them with the semi-truck. So if you will see a Josie and the Pussycats reference, we will run them over with a truck, just to be consistent. Thank you.
And Jeremy, where can people find you?
Well, aside from being here every 2 weeks with you, talking about old movies, about comic books, I am also on another podcast called Retrovaniacs, where we talk about old video games. But since we brought it up this episode several times, you can also find the band I'm in, Subtastics, at subtastics.bandcamp.com. Or again, just Google Subtastics, you'll find it. New album comes out in January.
And for me, you can always find me at Off Panel Creations. We're always building some piece of nerdy furniture. Now, thank you for spending some time with us. And if you have three small words for us, send us a note over movie-smash.com, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Pretty sure people have two letters for us.
Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo. Produced by me, Chris Roberts. Executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It too can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts. Now, Subtastics with Three Small Words. I'm a punk rock crowd queen. Brown paper magazine. Hotter than you've ever seen. And everywhere and in between. I'm a 10-ticket thrill ride. Don't you wanna come inside? A 5-star triple threat. Hunters in the hunt again. No one's gonna recommend.
subliminally, glad, so glad I can help.